better get a lawyer, son. You better get a real good one.
What does that mean? It means it's time for Highway Advocates, and the two legal eagles are with me, broadcasting from the luxury of their own homes. In fact, I shouldn't say that. I have no idea how luxurious their homes are, but they're on the line right now. Robert Bell, good morning to you.
Morning, morning.
And Adam Cochrane, who is also a partner in a legal eagle with Highway Advocates, is with us now. G'day, buddy.
Yeah, good morning, Luke. Great to be here.
Good to have you along. I was mentioning during my chat with Rod Hanafy on Tuesday, because you got Rod Hanafy out of a pickle some time ago, and Rob was telling us about it. If you are a truckie and you have been fined, the important thing is, and Rob was saying this on Tuesday, boys, the worst thing you can do, if you think you're innocent, if you think you've been given a shit deal, the worst thing you can do is pay the fine, correct?
Absolutely. It'll sit on your traffic history for all of time immemorial. It won't go away and it'll be used against you every time you come up in court or any other matter in the future.
So if you pay the fine and then say, well, hang on, I'll go to court, I don't think that was right, that's not the way to do it.
That's not the way to do it. It sort of means that if you pay the fine, it's treated as a conviction, even though it's not. Mm. It sits on your traffic history as a conviction. And every time, if you don't get the choice, you have to go to court, and you're sort of wavering on the side of maybe getting a dismissal, maybe not, that previous sort of traffic fine you paid could be the tipping edge that puts you into a conviction.
Okay. Now, Robert Bell, that's Robert, you're here now. Robert's next truckie. He's a paralegal now. And Adam Cochrane is a solicitor. Adam, you specialise in criminal law?
Oh, that's right. Well, I specialise in this type of law now, which is traffic, which is a subset of criminal law. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, Robert, you had a good win this week. What happened?
Yeah, we had a client that was charged with a critical fatigue breach, so doing
Explain
2 hours.
That.
Well, he was on what they call standard hours, which is, I guess, is the bait, you know, the bottom sort of fatigue regime, and because of these concurrent sort of 24-hour periods that these guys have to count. He made an error in one 24-hour period. He did 14, a bit over 14 hours, which is judged as a critical breach under standard hours. But one of the things we put to the court was that if this driver was on basic fatigue, it wouldn't be a breach. So apart from all the other things we put in the submission, the magistrate had pretty well made his decision by the time he'd read our submission. So it was a good result. The driver got off of what they call a dismissal or a section 10.1b, the sort of conditional release order. So a great result.
Adam.
Yeah, one of the things that we do, I think it's possibly unique to our legal practice, is that Rob and I spend a lot of time discussing the case, and we put together very detailed written submissions. You know, they can be up to 10 or 12 pages long, and we send those to the magistrate, and that really kind of sets it up for a good outcome.
Okay, now, Glyn's online. You helped Glyn get off a phone camera offence in New South Wales. Glyn, I'll put you on the air. Glyn, hello.
Hey.
Yes, g'day, Luke. Yeah, g'day, Glyn. Highway Advocates are there, Robert and Adam. What happened, mate?
I was photographed... going down the highway from a windscreen from one of those new overhead.
Yeah, yeah, they're getting a lot of people, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and they and I never, ever hang on to my telephone, you know, and I know for a fact that I never, ever do it. And I got the picture.
Mm.
Yeah, and when you get the picture, when we got the picture, we could see that my hand was on my knee.
And it was quite clear.
Yeah, it was quite clear. But when we when I wrote to the when I wrote to them up in New South Wales there about doing something about it, they just refused me. So I got on a Rob and Rob was able to help me out and get that dismissed before even taking it to court. But yeah, I would have had to have taken that to court.
Yeah, just stay there, Glyn. Robert Bell from Highway Advocates. How is it that when you see the photo that was taken of Glyn, and this is an offence that could have maybe lost his licence, if the photo is clear that he's not holding a phone. How did it get so far?
Well, the thing is, it wasn't clear, really, not to contradict Lynn, but you get three photos when you get a mobile, when these cameras take it. You get one looking down, which is sort of enhanced, so it looks a little bit pixelated.
Mm-hmm.
And with that enhancement, what looked to be Glenn's hand on his phone was actually probably a bit of smeared bug brains on the windscreen that had been enhanced, and it looked a bit like his hand on the phone. But then when you look at another image from a couple of milliseconds later, which is a clearer image, you can see that the phone is actually sitting in a holder, and Glenn's right hand was sitting palm down on
his... So you could actually see that the phone was in its holder, and it was nowhere near his hand. You see, this is the thing. If they're going to install this technology, and I think it's great technology because people talking on the phone should be stopped, but shouldn't it be a bit like an umpire dismissing a batsman? I mean, if there's any doubt, and you've got some poor bloke's livelihood in your hands, if there's any disparity, if there's any ambiguity whatsoever, shouldn't you be found not out, Adam?
You are 100% right there, Luke. You put your finger right on a principle that applies to these kind of matters. When you're dealing with legislation that penalises people, or it's criminal legislation, if there's any doubt, that doubt has to be exercised in favour of the person. So if these images are dubious, they shouldn't be sending the penalty notices out. But they're not applying that principle.
Now, Glenn, Jess tells me you are also the distributor of an electronic work diary that we've been talking about. Is that correct?
Yes, Luke. Yeah, I do, mate.
Look, Glenn, stay there because I've got to take a break. I want to hear about these electronic work diaries because I can't understand why every truckie can't have one now. I mean, we've moved. It's Thursday, the 21st of October, 2021, not 1961. And wouldn't these electronic work diaries get rid of all that ambiguity? If it's all done for you, the slight spelling mistakes that I hear people get fined for, that'd be gone. Mm. The exact amount of time that you were stationary, where you were, how fast you were travelling. Does it measure all that? We'll take a break and we'll come back and talk some more. 133353, Highway Advocates. If you've got a problem, they're here to try and help you. It's free legal advice on the radio this morning. The Night Shift on Triple M. Yeah, it's Thursday, and for a short time this morning, we're talking highway advocates, we're talking truckies and any other professional driver that needs legal help, because I came to know about highway advocates through Rod Hanafy. And Rod is the national president of the Road Freighters Association. And if you would have thought, if anyone knows their rights and the road rules, it'd be Rod Hanafy. But he found himself in a pickle. He'd heard about highway advocates, and they helped him out. They got him off. Because he was innocent. Now, I mean, there are plenty of people who get fined and do things and they are completely in the wrong. Well, there's not much that they can do. But if you feel as though you've been unjustly charged and you could lose a lot of money and possibly even lose your livelihood, highway advocates are there to back you up. Now, Glenn was on the phone before the break. Glenn, you're with me?
Yeah, I'm here, Luke.
Yeah, so highway advocates helped you out. But tell me about what it is you distribute. You distribute these electronic diaries, correct?
Yes, I do, mate. I distribute the Smart eDriver.
Tell me how it works.
Look, it's just an app on your phone and you use it as your work diary. It's as simple as just hitting work and rest, and it lets you know when your next break's due.
Yeah. Does it keep a record of how fast you're travelling?
No, it doesn't, mate.
Okay. Because there are diaries that are GPS connected, and they do. Does this diary know where you are, or is it purely and simply a record of where you are, how long you've stopped for?
Look, it does take your GPS position when you make an entry.
Ah, there you are.
Otherwise, it doesn't track you, so it doesn't know what you're doing. It's virtually a really good example of a paper diary and maybe logbook checker all wrapped up into the one thing where you just have a simple app. Yeah.
Robert, I've had callers from truckies who have gotten into trouble for a simple misspelling of a town that they've stopped at. Mm-hmm. Does that really happen?
Yeah, certainly. Just really trivial things, and that's what the electronic work diary takes away. We get a lot of people who call us and clients that have just been, you know, fined or get penalty notices for really simple mistakes. And the electronic work diary takes all that away. That information's already embedded into the diary. It knows all those things each day. So all you've got to really tell it is when you're working and when you're resting, and it does the rest. So all these mistakes that our clients end up in court for, it takes it away. And one key sentence in our sentencing submission today that had a lot of weight with the court and took a lot of notice was that the defendant has signed up to an electronic work diary which will prevent the recurrence of this error in the future. He is unlikely to reoffend and has good prospects of rehabilitation. They're key principles in sentencing, and the magistrates are taking notice of these clients signing up to the work diary prior to being sentenced, and it makes all the difference.
Yeah, Glenn, just before I let you go, these work diaries, what are they called?
It's the Smart E-Driver.
Smart?
E-Driver.
E-Driver. How much do they cost?
Yeah. It's $17 plus GST a month, and I provide 24/7 support, and I'm a driver / auditor, and I really help the guys, you know. They can ring me any time if they're having any troubles. Last thing I want is someone on the side of the road, you know, because their phone's playing up and they're getting frustrated, you know. So I just look after everybody who uses it. Yeah, it's a great little product, mate.
Okay, I'm just going to write it down. What's it called again?
Smart E-Driver.
Smart E-Driver.
Yeah.
$17 a month.
$17 a month plus GST. So $18.70.
Okay. Glenn, good to talk to you. I'm glad that Highway Advocates managed to get you off with your mobile phone drama.
Yeah, it was great to get out of that, I'll tell you.
Yeah, good on you. Thank you, Glenn. Bye-bye. 133353. So, Robert, there are other forms of work diaries that actually are GPS-connected that can monitor your speed. Is that correct?
I think so. Luke, I haven't really gone into the whole...
We need to find out, don't we?
Yeah, but I tell you what, for the cost basically of your toasted sandwich and a chocolate milk, there's all that pain of all those silly little work diary mistakes that end up in court taken away. So, you know, $18 a month and it's all there done for you. All you got to do is tell it when you're working and when you're resting. It does the rest.
Okay, good on you. Well, maybe we'll be, I tell you what, Glenn will... I was about to say, maybe we'll be in touch with Glenn. My manager, Mike, will be in touch with him. I'll tell you that for nothing. 133353. I'm glad you could help him out. Philippe is online. Is it Philip or Philippe?
Phil, if you like.
Okay, I'll call you Phil. Phil.
Yes.
You were charged with drink driving in Queensland and you went to Highway Advocates. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Tell us the full story.
Oh, it was one Sunday. I normally start at 11 o'clock at night. And so I did my normal thing and went to bed at 2 in the afternoon. You know, I'd had a few beers that morning after mowing the lawn, etc. Mm-hmm. And then about 3:30, quarter to 4, I got a phone call from a new girlfriend, if you like, and thought, I better take this, you know. And after chatting for half an hour or so, Parramatta were playing the Knights in a final. I thought, I'll get up and watch the footy. Unconsciously, I grabbed a few beers while I'm doing it before I realised what I was doing, so... I thought, shit, I better stop doing this. Oh, pardon language. Stop doing this. So I put it back and finished the game and went to bed. Anyway, that night heading to work, about 10:30, quarter to 11, police pulled me over. They reckon I was going a little bit fast somewhere, but I doubt that. I don't speed anyway. And they put me on the boozer and I was over.
How far?
Yeah.
How far?
079, which is under... mid level.
So what, Robert, is that low range?
Yeah, that's low range drink driving, but it still ends you up in court, and it's still regarded as an offence that'll take you off the road for some time.
So Philip contacted you.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
Philip,
what happened?
Contacted us. Well, we went through the process. It's a bit of a process in Queensland. You have to get affidavits prepared, all sorts of... There's a lot of stuff involved in it. So we went through the process. We went over to Philip's work and sat down there with his boss, who was very helpful. He completed an affidavit saying that Philip was a vital part of their organisation, a cog in the wheel. We put it all together, and then we went to the courthouse there, put it to the magistrate, and we got a good result. He got a 1 month, a 2 month restricted driving licence, which means Philip can drive solely for work, no other purposes, for 2 months, and then you're off the hook, so to speak.
So there you are. So a lesson learnt, Philip, but you are still able to earn a living. So Highway Advocates helped you out there. So can you drive a personal car for personal reasons, or can you just drive professionally?
I can drive to work and home from work, but apart from that, no. But I'm also allowed to, I mean, I'm at the markets right now, parked up waiting for stock to take back to the warehouse. So. Yeah. I can still drive, I can still work.
Thank God for Highway Advocates, eh?
Well, if it weren't for the gentleman there, I doubt that I would have got the result I got, because the as Robert said, the procedure and the paperwork, and it was all beyond me, so that's why I thought, well, I'll get these guys in and they can help me out.
Get the professionals in. Good on you. Robert and Adam, good call, good result. We'll come back. Robert and Adam, we'll talk in just a second about drivers getting themselves into trouble on the side of the road, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah.
What are you referring to?
It's when you're questioned by authorised officers and police officers. There's certain things you must tell them, but there's certain things you shouldn't tell them.
Okay, we'll talk about that coming up. This is The Night Shift on Triple M. The amazing David Bowie here on The Night Shift with Luke Boner and Highway Advocates. There's a few people online with calls for you boys, some truckies who are in a sticky situation. We'll see if we can help them out in just a second. New from the people at Aussie Hoses, the Easy Turn Garden Tap. God, I love this. We got two of them. We got one out the front and one out the back, and they put them on when they brought our Aussie Hose out. Now, I told you about the Aussie Hose. 20 metres long, it's unkinkable, and it retracts automatically for you. Well, if you've got a shit tap, these are the people you need to talk to, because they have these high-quality taps. They're made in Europe, and they're made from one piece of brass, and it's a lever. So if you know of somebody who's a keen gardener, but maybe they've got some arthritis in their wrist or their fingers, this is it. But not only is this a fantastic tap, it delivers up to 50% more water flow, and they never, ever leak. And this is for my listeners only, for Triple M night shifters only. You can get one tap, and by the way, they will come to your house and install it for you. If you say you're from the night shift, they will come to your house and install it for you. These taps, just $149, they're usually $299, but look, here's the deal. If you want two of them, so you want the tap at the front and your tap at the back done, they'll do both for $249. They will do both for $249, come to your house and install it for you. Say goodbye to the corroded garden taps forever. This is the Easy Turn Garden Tap, fully installed by Aussie Hoses. Now, here is a phone number, but you just go to aussiehoses.com.au. But here's the phone number. 1-300-384-165, 1-300-384-165, and you'll love it. But this is for Triple M night shifters only. 1-300-384-165. Back in a sec. A lot of people online wanting to talk to you about their legal experiences and with questions. Highwayadvocates.com.au. Robert, just before we went to the break, you were saying it's really important. And this is not just for truckies. I guess this is for anyone. But if you are pulled over and you're by the side of the road and you're shitting yourself, you're nervous, I guess it would be fairly easy to be intimidated. You were saying to me off air, it's important to get the message through that you should know your rights. And there are things that maybe you shouldn't say because you can get yourself into trouble. What were you referring to?
Well, often when we're defending clients, we get the prosecution brief, and in that brief, it shows a record of interview that these authorised officers have with the driver at the time of the incident. And more often than not, we look at it and think, oh, why did you say that? So there's often admissions and all types of things said under the at the time, which are then all recorded and listed down, and the court gets to see them. So what I'm saying here is, one, there's certain things you should tell them, like your name, your address, you show them a license, your work diary, maybe where you've been or where you've come from, but you don't have to tell them anything else. Certainly don't make any admissions, and absolutely do not sign anything.
What do they ask you to sign?
Well, they'll do this statement and then say, do you agree with what we've said here? And
yeah. Adam?
Yeah, well, I had a particular case where this happened. It was really unfortunate. The driver was driving a vehicle that was over dimension. He wasn't aware of it at the time. He was pulled over. The authorised officers pointed it out to him. Then they did a formal interview where they gave him the caution, said anything you do say will be used in evidence, blah, blah, blah. They then said, were you aware that your vehicle was over dimension? He said, yes. He said yes at that point because they'd pointed it out to him previously. When the judge saw that,
yeah.
she said, you knew. And I said, no, he didn't. But she wouldn't accept that. She said, well, that's the record of interview, and I'm accepting that he knew he was breaking the law.
The police officers said, look at this. You're over dimension. He's gone, okay, all right. And then later on, are you aware that your truck was oversized? He's gone, yes. Meaning you just showed it to me.
He just told me.
Yeah, I do now because you just told me. But maybe that's what he should have said. I do now, you just showed me.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's not how it came across in the statement, and it was very damning, and that's why Robert
to know what to do. I mean,
don't say things.
Yeah. You're trained to drive a truck. I mean, you're not trained to get through the legal jargon. I mean, surely a fair magistrate can see that you've got someone there that doesn't understand. Anyway. I just feel sometimes truckies are hardly done by. Sometimes you bring it on yourself. I know. Now that there are cameras in every cabin, that would keep a lot of truckies fairly honest, wouldn't it? Boys, one of you?
It certainly keeps you under surveillance. It's watching you all the time. You know, things happen sometimes. I mean, there's a lot of distractions apart from the mobile phone in the cabin. There's all the, your UHF, the stereo, the MT data systems, all these type of electronic things. Any one of them could trip you up.
Yeah. Chris is online. G'day, Chris.
Yeah, g'day, Luke and Rob and Adam. That's interesting. You got the vet topic right at this moment because that's what I want to bring up. I'm sure both of you gentlemen are aware of a court case.
Don't say where. Don't say even what state. The reason is, I don't know where you're going here, but I've got to watch out for libel and defamation. But you're referring to a recent case.
Understand that. It was widely reported in all industry media, Luke. So it's not unknown, and I know the fellas know about it. Where a driver was found responsible for the damages caused to his employer's vehicle in an accident, so he's up for $500,000 in damages. My concern is what that's going to do, the precedent that this has set. Does this now mean that every driver in Australia is going to need to take out their own insurance to cover themselves for any potential damage that they may cause to an employer's vehicle while it's in their control?
Yeah, no, I know exactly the case you're talking about. So do the boys, obviously. Adam, I'll go to you. This truck driver involved in this very famous incident, was he an employee of the truck company? Was he a subcontractor? Was he a private contractor? And does that have any effect on the liability that you have to take responsibility for if you damage the vehicle that you're in, Adam?
That is the key issue, Luke. You put your finger right on it again. And thank you, Chris, for ringing up and asking about this issue. Look, I'll have to be careful what I say because we've been in touch with the particular driver in this case and we've given him some legal advice and we certainly think there may be grounds to appeal. But the issue in this case was he wasn't employed directly by the transport company or the company that owned the truck. And they were joint plaintiffs in this proceeding. And they sued the driver because he was employed through a labour hire company. So hang on.
So the truck driver we're talking about was involved in an accident, was he?
He was. So he answered his mobile phone, lost control of the vehicle.
Okay. And there's footage of that.
So, yeah.
Okay. And there was massive damage done to the truck. Trucks are very expensive. I get that.
But, Absolutely. So the plaintiffs have sued the driver for the damage to the truck, which is a write-off, and also for the damage to the goods that were being transported.
Okay, sorry, Adam, I'm asking you questions because I'm a layperson, right? So the truck's insurance isn't covered if the driver breaks the law?
No. Well, what happened here was normally, if he'd been employed directly by the transport company, he would have been protected as an employee.
Even if he used his phone when he shouldn't have?
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. Yeah.
Right.
And the insurance, as you say, would probably cover that. The difficulty here was that this driver wasn't employed by the transport company. He was employed by a different company, which hired him out to the transport company. And that's then exposed him to this liability, and that's why the judgment was made against him. So when Chris said, should drivers now get their own insurance? Well, they should. If they're not employees of the company they're working for, then this case would suggest that they do need to look at that seriously.
Okay, but anyone who's self-employed has insurance, surely?
Yeah, if you're an owner-driver, yeah, you would have insurance to cover that kind of thing. But this guy was still an employee, but because he was employed through a company that then provided his work to the transport company, and he wasn't directly employed by the transport company, that's then exposed him to this legal liability.
So this driver was not a direct employee of the truck company where he had the accident. But yeah. But surely, somewhere along the food chain, there has to be insurance. That's what you pay insurance for, isn't it? Can you explain?
Well, you're right. You're absolutely right, Luke. I can't comment on that because I don't know the particulars of the case. But what happened? Well, the plaintiffs didn't sue the employer. They sued the employer's employee.
Because my understanding, you guys know better than me. Chris, are you still there?
Yeah, yeah.
My understanding is this driver might lose his house.
Yeah, well, that's more than likely the case. But if I could just get the boys' opinion on this, as an owner driver now, ostensibly run as a proprietary limited company, and as an owner driver, our proprietary limited companies finance our vehicles and insure the vehicles, and we are actually an employee of our own company. So does it create a precedent and a situation where an owner driver could actually have his insurer repair a vehicle and then sue him for the damage personally for the damages caused to the vehicle owned by his own private company?
Adam Cockayne, what do you reckon?
Yeah, well, getting into complex territory here, Chris. I can understand your anxiety, but I would suggest to all owner drivers, make sure you check your insurance policies and get in touch with the insurer to see whether or not you are covered for damage to the vehicle and damage to the goods if anything happens as a result of your fault.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. If you're and given that in most accident situations, it's fault is looked for, so if it's...
Look, no insurance company lines up and says, please, can I pay? Insurance companies do investigations because they don't want to pay. Correct, Adam?
Oh, well, look,
I'll leave you out. That's my experience. Anyway, go on, Chris.
Yeah, no, that's exactly my experience too, Luke. So just as I say, the other big problem is in that I see out of it all is the problem that you were talking to Rod Hanafy about the other night about attracting people into the industry. Hmm. How the hell do you attract people to this industry when they're likely to have this hanging over their head?
Well, yeah, I guess the number one thing is don't touch your phone while you're driving.
No, that's right.
But no, your point is very, very valid, Adam and Rob. Adam, can I ask another simple question of you, Mr. Legal Eagle? If I have comprehensive insurance with my motor vehicle and I am doing something illegal, for example, I'm on the phone, or I run a red light, or I do something else that transgresses the law, is my insurance going to cover me if I cause damage?
Again, it depends on the particular policy and what's included. But
I know, for example, if you are over the limit, you've got no insurance.
Well, generally, you can't insure against your own criminal conduct, although there seem to be some policies out there that may allow certain corporate entities to do that. But I'd say for most of us, our insurance won't cover us when we act illegally on the roads.
Getting back to Chris's point, we are talking at the moment with Rod Hanafy about encouraging young Australians to become truck drivers. And the consensus at the moment, Robert Bell, is that it's a tough industry. It can be unforgiving. And I've had truck drivers ring me saying, why the hell would you want to encourage your children to be truck drivers? I even had Whinging Warren. We're calling Whinging Warren now. And he said he's got two kids. And he said if their careers advisors at school had suggested that one of his kids become a truck driver, he'd go down there and give him a serve. Chris, is this just yet another reason why you wouldn't want to become a truckie?
I think it's something you seriously got to consider among everything, Luke. If you're, and especially if you've, if you've spent a fair bit of time gathering a little bit of assets around yourself, and if you're likely to open yourself up through any, it's very, very easy. Like, it's all well and good to say don't break the law, but I mean, it's pretty easy to get involved, as you say, in a situation where you might have run through a red light or made a mistake, that still causes you to be charged with breaking the law and then to find...
you're not insured. You're not insured and you might lose your house. It is absolutely frightening. It's a very interesting case. It'll be interesting to see how it works out. Chris, thank you for your call.
I think it's got as much... sort of drama involved in it as what the RSRT had a couple of years ago.
Good on you. Thanks for your call, Chrissy boy.
Thank you.
133353. We'll come back with more calls for highway advocates here on the Night Shift and Triple M. The Night Shift here on the Triple M network with Luke Boner, Miss Jess, and highway advocates here. You're very busy this morning, boys. There's a few people that want to say...
Well,
that's what you're here for.
It's great.
You may as well earn your keep.
Yeah, we're happy to talk.
Scott's there. Scott, what's your question? Good morning.
Hey, Luke, how are you, mate?
I'm very good.
Oh, that's good. Look, my mate Thomas rang up last week and asked him about a mate. I'm actually the mate who got fined. So I just wanted to ask the boys a question. A week or two ago, I was pulled over by Highway Patrol in my prime mover, Bobtail, and... they went through my logbook. They didn't find nothing at all. Look, I've never had a logbook breach in my life for 20 years. So I had a new book. Long story short, I didn't write my depot address. So instead of giving me a caution, instead of educating me, which I asked for, they said no. They fined me $691. So they spent 45 minutes going through my book. Couldn't find anything. Even said to me, mate, I haven't seen a book as good as that in a long time. Still booked me. I wrote a letter in saying... listen, in 20 years, I've never had a logbook breach.
Hmm.
And they wrote back today saying that we're still giving you the fine.
Robert Bell.
Well, Scott, everything you said really encapsulates why you shouldn't have got a fine, but you did. And that's what we increasingly find. This home base or work depot, guys forgetting to put it in, it's a common mistake. It's a big fine. And again, if you had an electronic work diary, that's in there. It's in there all the time. You don't have to worry about it. I don't understand why you guys leave yourself open on these paper diaries. Are such a big fines. It's bad with your record. Everything the cop has said, you should have got a caution. Just to look, fill that in for us now, mate, and off you go.
Give me some. Can you treat this as education and a warning?
That's right, but that doesn't seem to happen anymore. It's all about the money. So
my question is it worth trying to fight it? They've already wrote the letter back saying I'll still get the fine, and
Absolutely, Scott. Like we said, we appear for someone today on a critical fatigue breach, which is a maximum penalty of over $17,000, and got a dismissal. With your record and the circumstances, it's highly likely you would get a dismissal on that as well, on a guilty plea. But give us a call, mate. The number's on our website, highwayadvocates.com.au. Give us a call off air tomorrow and we'll talk about it and see what we can do for you.
All right, what's the number? Just in case, on the rare chance somebody's got a pen out, Robert Bell, slowly, what's the phone number?
Here comes my call centre voice. It's 0491 263 602.
Do it again.
Highway Advocates, 0491 263-602. Here for you 24/7.
Forget the voice, Robert. Just seriously. 0491-263-602. There it is. Good on you, Scott.
One more question, if that's right. One more question, if that's all right, quickly.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to get your take on. So when they pulled me over, as I said, I was bobtail. I dropped my double. I dropped the trailers. I'd closed off my book, and I was driving. So they tried to pin me, saying that I was driving after I'd closed my book off. I said, listen, personal use of a fatigue-related heavy vehicle. I'm going to refuel and stop. And he basically said, look, I'm not up to date on that legislation. I'm going to write you, take your license down, and I'm going to get back to you about that. My argument to him was, I have an hour to drive a personal heavy, like I can drive that truck if I don't have a car available for 1 hour to restock, refuel things, or not refuel, but restock. And I'm worried I'm going to get a fine for that because he said he's going to go back and look at the legislation, and I will know about it in the mail if he doesn't agree with me.
Rob.
What? Not quite correct there, Chris. Sorry, Scott. That hour you talk about, you've got that hour in a 24-hour break, and you can only use that hour unless you're at least 3 hours into that break. It doesn't mean that you've got an hour every time you sign off your book to use the primary as a personal limousine. You can only use it in that fashion during a 24-hour break, as long as you don't use it in that fashion less than 3 hours into that 24-hour break. So just be careful of that, mate. I think you may have misinterpreted that little bit of legislation.
So, look, I'll tell you what, Scott, just write the number down. 0491-263-602 Highway Advocates. I don't know if we have enough time. I mean, you've got a stack of calls here, boys. Very quickly, Brendan, you had to be very quick, Brendan. What's happened?
Yeah, mine sounds pretty small bickies after this stuff, but I got done in Queensland back in May for speeding. I paid, that was in my private car. I paid the fines, but I was going to cop 7 demerits out of it, which I already had 7 demerits on my licence, and it's obviously going to knock me off the road. In the meantime, though, I still haven't had the demerit hit my New South Wales licence, and I've had a point drop off my licence, so it took me down to 6, which puts me on 13 when these Queensland ones finally get here, which is a negotiable point. But since then, there's another one fallen off, which will put me under. So am I going to get knocked off or what?
Rob?
Well, Brendan, the quick answer to that is, I don't know. The old point system between states is not set in stone. Sometimes they transfer over, sometimes they don't. But one thing to be aware of is if they do transfer over, they go back in time. So a lot of people think because they've had points come back onto their demerit sort of history, it'll be taken back to the time the offence occurred and your point situation back then. So those points that have come back on won't necessarily help you, unfortunately.
Okay, so it will be backdated to the time of it's been 5
possibly.
Months. I certainly don't want to bring him up and say, oi, dumbasses, you haven't hit me yet.
That probably wouldn't be a good idea, Brendan.
No, but... no.
Well, that's why I'm keeping quiet and I'm asking.
Not a great career move. But look, I tell you what, give the boys a call. Highwayadvocates.com.au 0491-263-602. Boys, you're going to have to go and make a cup of tea and come back after the break. I should have let you go by now, but there's a few other callers there and they want to talk to you, okay? Is that all right with you, boys?
Yeah, boo, awesome.
Okay,
absolutely.
Go and pop a couple of Nature B, okay?
All right, I'll do that.
Go and have 2 Nature B. 133353, if you want to talk to Highway Advocates, they're going to stay around after the break. So and there's a lot of calls there with lots of questions, and it's good stuff. And this is free legal advice. Gardeners everywhere, they are raving about Swift Grow, the totally organic, all-natural fish fertilizer with amazing benefits. If it's green and it grows, you are going to love Swift Grow. And even Broadacre farmers are experiencing the Swift Grow benefits. Thousands of backyard gardeners across Australia love it. And right now, you can trial Swift Grow and save. And it's coming into summer. It's the ideal time to give your garden some lovin'. If you purchase 4 litres of Swift Grow for just $119.95, Joe's throwing in the Swift Fort. Now, this is this other product that he has developed. He's a microbiologist. He's a scientist, Joe. Swift Fort gets rid of the nasties in your garden, the aphids, the bugs, the slugs, the snails, but it attracts the bees. It is an amazing product, like Swift Grow. He's going to throw in the Swift Fort if you order your 4 litres of Swift Grow. Go harvest with the neighbours or a relative. Swiftgrow.com.au. If it's green and it grows, you're going to love Swift Grow. Swiftgrow.com.au. Joe's phone number is there when you log on to Swift Grow. Give it a call. Leave a message. Tell him you heard it on the night shift. Now, those truckies who have legal questions for highway advocates, you stay right where you are. They're coming back right after this break. Don't go away.
Better get a lawyer, son. You better get a real good one.
Highway advocates on this morning, the two legal eagles, Robert Bell, who has been a truckie for over, how many years? 20-something years? How long were you a truckie for?
Oh, at least that, Luke, yeah.
And Adam Cockayne, the legal eagle, who is in partnership with Robert, and they're from Highway Advocates. You've got a question, they're here to talk to you, and hopefully they can save you some money, save you your licence. Is this who I think it is?
Yeah, Byron.
Oh, crikey. Okay, boys, just let me warn you, okay? This is Whinging Warren, otherwise known as Plum Boy. Warren...
Yes.
You wanted. What are you talking about this morning? Electronic logbooks. You've heard us talk about them this morning. What are your thoughts?
Well, one of me dash my. It's what they call a Navman. Navman.
Warren, you're breaking up. You're breaking up.
Yeah, hang on. I'm trying to. I'm just. Moving.
It's all about preparation, Warren, isn't it?
Yeah. I know. Hey, buddy, leave.
Warren.
Is that better or what?
Not too good, but it's, go. What did you want to say?
Okay, I've got a logbook, electronic logbook on my dash, right? $2,000 unit. Now, I handed it to an RMS bloke at Chindra at the Weybridge in northern New South Wales. He handed it back to me. He said, mate, we're not interested in them. We don't recognise them as a legitimate record. Right? Now... They are good in the fact they will tell you when you need to have a break, right? They will tell you when you're getting close to having a break, and they will tell you if you're breaching or not. And they do keep a very good record of your hours, but they do not show your GPS position, right? So they're pretty much useless when it comes to trying to find out where you actually are. You need to use your telephone.
Right. Now, Robert Bell... That electronic logbook that we were talking about with Glenn earlier on, Smart E-Driver, is that the one he was talking about?
Yep, that's the one.
That's a completely different thing to what Warren's talking about now.
Well, I'm not sure if Warren's talking about an actually approved electronic work diary or another device that actually just monitors you.
Luke, let me talk for Christ's sake. Luke.
Jesus.
Now listen,
it's the Warren show, folks. I should have warned you. Go on, Warren.
No, mate. The company I work for has got 50 trucks. They're in every single truck. They're approved unit, and they use them for audit. They not only record my speed, it all reports back to base. But when it comes to being on the side of the road, if you need to find out where you are, you cannot use it to find it. All it does is show you your work diary page, and it has entries of times in it. It doesn't have a thing. Now, when I handed it to the RMS bloke, he said, we're not interested in them. He says, we will not look at them. He says, we need paper logbook. So I don't know who's telling who, even with the government, I don't know who's telling who that they're legal at the moment. They might be legal, but they're not recognised. You still have to run a paper diary and you still have to record the right information in your paper diary.
Now here's my question, Robert Bell and Adam, which one of you wants to answer this? If they are legal, but the RMS doesn't recognise them, what's the point of them being legal? Who wants to go here?
Yeah, let me tell you, Luke, if it's an approved electronic work diary by the regulator, then the RMS, whoever, police, whatever, they have to acknowledge them and they have to accept them. But if it is a unit that is used by Warren's employer or many other employers about around the country that's an electronic sort of monitoring system but not an approved electronic work diary, then it has no legal significance.
It's approved. It's approved. I keep saying that, Luke. It's approved by the RMS. They will use it in an audit, but it's no good to you on the side of the road. And when you take it to an RMS bloke, the RMS bloke, you can't argue with the RMS. They say they're not interested in looking at it. If he says he's not interested in looking at it, what are you supposed to say? I'm looking at this as a driver, not as a legal eagle or the RMS bloke. I take it to the bloody RMS bloke, I hand it to him, and he says, sorry, mate, I'm not interested in it. What am I supposed to do?
Again, what I said there, Warren.
It's an approved unit, mate. 50 of them in 50 trucks. It's approved by the RMS.
Robert's trying to answer, Warren.
Yeah, go on.
Just because it's in 50 trucks and you say it's approved doesn't mean it's an approved electronic work diary by the regulator. What you just said is the RMS use it for audit purposes. Yes, they can check off the entries against the paperwork diaries using these devices, but they do not have to accept them as an electronic work diary, because what it sounds like to me, what you're describing, is not an approved electronic work diary.
I'm telling you, you're wrong, mate. I'm sorry. I'm telling you, you're very wrong. It is approved by the NHVR, and it is approved by the RMS. It's approved by everyone. It's the top of the range unit. It's cost them nearly $100,000.
What's it called? What's the name of the unit? He'll look into it. Hello, Warren. Hello.
I'm here. Teltrac. Navman Teltrac.
Adam and Robert, can you look into this? Adman Teltrac.
Nav, with an N.
Yeah, I know, I said that.
Yep. No, you said F-man.
No, I didn't. I'm sorry, Warren, you're wrong. I'm sorry, Warren, you're very wrong. I said Navman, I clearly did. Don't argue with me, Warren.
Okay, well, I've just looked up the Navman Teltrac. I hope you're sitting down, Warren. It is not an approved electronic work diary. It is a telematics platform that can be used to monitor different things, but it is not an approved electronic work diary. That's why they can't accept it, because it's not it's not approved by the regulator as an electronic work diary.
Well, I'll tell you what, so my employer's lying to me.
I wouldn't say that, but what you've just told me, it's electronic work diary. But give us a call tomorrow. There's different versions. And if I'm wrong on this, I'm happy to say I'm wrong, right? There are different versions around, but what you're telling me, if the RMS are not accepting it, then they're wrong. They have to accept it if it is approved in the way that you say it is. But give us the call tomorrow. Give us the exact model number, and we'll easily be able to find out whether it is approved or not.
Warren, you're clever at sending emails. Go to highwayadvocates.com.au. Can you do that? You got time?
Well,
give him all the details, because you're saying your employer is saying it's approved. Robert Bell and Adam, the lawyers here, say it's probably a great gadget, but it's not an approved electronic diary. Is that what you're saying, Robert Bell?
Look, I may be stepping back from. I see this product does have a product that can be approved as such. So I'm going to say, without knowing the exact model number, but what Warren's saying, if they're not accepting it, they're making a big mistake, right? So we need to know exactly what model number.
So if you don't have a paper diary and you've got Warren's gadget and that's all you have, and a guy in the RMS says, I'm sorry, I don't accept it, and you believe that your employer says, this is your replacement for your paper diary, are you going to win it in court?
If it's an approved diary, yes, you will.
Well, the trouble is, I'm the driver out here at the coalface. I'm better off just running a paper logbook and be done with it. In due respect, Robert, mate, I pretty much ignore the thing. I use my paper logbook and I fill it out correctly. And honestly, all this new technology is just becoming a nightmare. Well, this thing squawks all night. It's a distraction because it's in my face. I'd rather just drive the truck without anything in my face.
Robert,
well, you can use that as an aid for your paperwork, Dory Warren. Definitely, if that thing's running as well, it'll be monitoring your hours. And if you're still using a paperwork, Dory, at least it's going to tell you when you're possibly going to breach or all those types of things. So I suppose it's a good aid in that fashion.
Warren, I've got to keep moving. Either send Highway Advocates an email or send me one, buddy, and just take a photo of it, but get the exact name of it and I'll forward it on. Okay.
Yeah, all right,
mate. Okay, mate. Cheers, buddy. 133353 is the telephone number. We're going to have to hurry. You guys are up way too late. Gary's online. Gary, what did you want to say?
Yeah, with the electronic diary, then the paperwork diary, I think they don't want to look at the electronic diary one because you're liable to make a mistake in the book. Your
book,
so they can find you. So that's why a lot of
the bikers using your book. It's not a good line. Can you, Adam and Robert, can you hear what he's saying? Okay, Robert.
Yeah. What Gary's saying, I think, is he's insinuating that the authorities don't want to look at the electronic work diaries because there's probably more scope for revenue in the paper diaries, or there's more chance to pick up breaches and errors in a paper diary. I think, like all new technology, there's probably some resistance from all quarters to it, and that resistance is probably being found in some of the roadside enforcement as well. It'll take time for these things to get embedded within our culture and within the transport industry, but I think they're here and they're here to stay.
Gary, is that what you're saying?
Yep, that's it.
All right, I'll let you go. Gary, thank you for ringing. We do appreciate it, but it's just the line is just so noisy, but you got your message across, and Robert knows exactly what you're talking about. Alex, hello.
How are you?
Yeah, much better line. Alex, talk to the boys. What did you want to say?
All right, so it got me thinking a couple of months ago when I had a truck driver and a double cut me off. So he was in the wrong. I tried to call him up at the CB and tell him that, well, hold on a second, you just cut me off. He's why. And long story short, he had a go at me, and I said, all right, well, if you're going to be like that, well, all the best, and wished him well on his travels. But it got me thinking, how would you go around telling someone, if you know something's not to the letter of the law, so you get pulled over or something like that, so likes of the diary side of things, and you know that it is 110% right, how would you turn around and then go, well, that's actually what it says in the legislation side of things, or is that something that you then have to go and take to court?
Robert. Or Adam, who wants to go? One of you.
I think Alex, what Alex is trying to say there is that if you're trying to explain a legal point to someone on the road who has their own perspective on it, it's probably a waste of time. And I've got to agree with you, Alex. I think what we said to earlier is don't make any admissions. Sit there, know your facts, and then if you think you've been done wrong by, you've been done wrong by, make a sort of contemporaneous note. So make a diary note or write down what happened so you've got a clear recollection of what happened at the time. And then if you want to challenge it later on, hopefully through us, then you'll have clear facts to give us about what happened.
So on that side, it's all well and good to say, well, that's not the way it should be, but you keep it at something like that it's not admissions to it, and you, on the other side of it, adhere to the right to remain silent on that side and just wait until it becomes a much of an issue that it needs to then take that step to court. That's, I take it, what you're trying to say about it?
In a roundabout way, yeah. Just sort of, there's no point. I mean, these guys have got the guns and all everything. Just sort of make your point, but don't sort of persist on it, because if they're not with you, you're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah, so, I fully agree with that. Don't be a dick to them there's no need to.
All right. Thank you for your call, Alex. Look, we've got a ton of callers there. We'll come back and we'll take some more. It's all happening here this morning on the night shift. If you've got a legal question for the legal eagles, 133353 is the telephone number. Back after this. This is the Queens of the Stone Age and Triple M. The Queens of the Stone Age here on the night shift. 133353. You guys are very busy this morning. I don't know if the penny suddenly dropped or all of a sudden, we've got a lot of truckies out there that have thought to themselves, shit, I am in trouble. I don't want to pay the fine. I think I'm innocent. I'm going to need some help. Highwayadvocates.com.au. Now, just before I go to another caller, Robert Bell, you wanted to say something about Warren.
Yeah, I'm sure Adam's going to be recording this particular session, because it's not often that I admit that I might be wrong. But Teltrac Navman do make an electronic work diary. It was approved in November 2020. The way Warren was describing his product, it led me to believe that it wasn't that particular product, but I just want to make it clear that the particular company does make an electronic work diary.
And is it approved? And if that's the one that Warren's got, should that bloke at the RMS have said, yes, we acknowledge that?
Absolutely. If that was approved as electronic work diary and it's the one that Warren is talking about, then the Transport for New South Wales, as they're known today, should have acknowledged that and accepted it.
Why can't we have an industry standard machine?
Why can't we have a heavy vehicle national law that applies all across Australia?
Why can't we have public holidays on the same day?
Yeah, exactly.
133353 is the... if you'd like to hear some more rhetorical questions, you can go to our podcast. James is online. James, what's your question?
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, we're good.
Just went through my mate went through a red light camera the other day. He was just asking me if I could get onto you guys. There was someone behind him. He was in a truck. There was someone behind him. He couldn't stop for the red light camera. Does he have any chance of reviewing that at all, would you think?
James, I think probably not. We have been to court on these types of matters. The general sort of consensus we get from magistrates is truck drivers are professional operators. They should be aware of these traffic lights. You should anticipate them. It's one of those offences that it's very, very difficult. If the camera sees you going for a red light and the camera shows you going for a red light, then you haven't got much chance, to be honest. But tell him to give us a call anyway. There might be circumstances behind it, but it's a difficult one to beat, I'll say that.
Even though he couldn't brake because there was a truck behind him and all that sort of thing?
Again, give us a call, explain the circumstances, but they're difficult to beat.
Just another one, just quickly on the NHVR work diaries. If you jump on their website, there's five companies, approved companies. You can only go with one of those five approved companies and use their systems on whatever tablet they have. You know what I mean? So if you jump on their website, it's all on there. So.
No, it's all good. We'll do that. Yeah. Good advice,
NHVR website. NHVR, EWD, and there's five companies there. So you've got to go through the five of those companies. So.
Good on you, James. All right. Thanks for that. 133353 is the number. G'day, Darren.
How are you, gentlemen?
Everyone's great, mate. What's your question?
Mate, very quickly, look, we all know you want rhetorical questions. Not all bosses in this industry are created the same either. Look, I recently worked for someone. I decided to leave, and in hindsight of what's happened with the case in North Queensland, I'm very happy. We were forced to sign a contract that basically said, if I stuff up, I'm gonna make you pay. Is it legal? Yeah, or was it unconscionable at the time because I needed a job and I just had to sign it?
Okay. Adam, you wanted to answer this?
Look, my answer's pretty predictable there, Darren. If someone's getting you to sign a legal contract, you probably should go to a lawyer and get it reviewed. They can go through the terms and tell you whether there's anything in there that's unconscionable or unreasonable and you should push back on.
Yeah, look, it seems to be an almost not industry standard, but let's just say among some of the lesser employees, I would hate to think how many drivers out there now are driving down the road tonight that have actually signed the same agreement.
But one thing to remember, Darren, is you can't contract out of your legal responsibility. So if an employer is trying to avoid their legal liability by getting to sign something in a contract, that won't work. So that's why you need a lawyer to look over it.
Thank you, Darren. The thing that's blown me away this morning, Robert and Adam, is this court case that came up earlier in the program, about a driver that was not a direct employee of a trucking company, but almost would you call him a subcontractor? Was he a subcontractor?
Well, it's difficult to explain the relationship. So he's employed by this labour hire company and they provide his services.
Yeah. But I just can't believe he's not covered by insurance. And this bloke has had an accident. He's caused damage to both the freight that he's towing and the prime mover. And it looks as though he could lose his house. And you would assume that even if you are hired by a hire labour company or a subcontracting company, you would assume that the insurance would cover you for an accident.
You would, or you would assume that whoever suffered the loss would sue the employer rather than the employee, but that's not what happened.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on that. It's a really interesting case. Jesse, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
We're all very good, Jesse. What's your question?
I've got a quick one. I hired a bus a few months back, and I've received a fine for parking in a bus zone from Brisbane City Council. There's another thing to it. They've also spelt my name wrong on the fine. So I'm just wondering where can I... I was thinking of taking it to the magistrate and trying to explain it because I can't find anywhere where it says you can't park a bus in a bus zone.
You were driving a bus. Was it a council bus?
No. I'd hired one from a hire company.
You hired a bus?
I was dropping off passengers in the bus zone at 2 a.m. in the morning.
It was a party bus.
No, it wasn't a party bus, but it was just an event that I had. I was dropping off a busload of people.
Okay, anyway, but it was a bus. He's parked a bus in a bus zone. Adam?
Yeah, look, I've had this before. I've had this with Brisbane City Council, funnily enough. My advice to you, Jesse, was if they've misspelt your name, then the fine's automatically invalid, so you push back on that. The issue about the bus is whether or not your particular bus falls within the definition of a bus within the appropriate regulations. So that might be the reason why they fined you. So it all really depends on what the legislation says. But give us a call. That's something we can look into and help you with.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it was a $200 fine, and on the fine it actually says it's registered as a bus. So I was like, hand in the air, going,
yeah.
Why'd they send this to me?
Yeah, it sounds a bit strange, but yeah, give us a call.
Okay. Give them a call, 0491-263-602, highwayadvocates.com.au. I'm going to take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll wrap up. There's a couple more calls there that want to talk to you. You're popular this morning, boys. You're popular this morning. highwayadvocates.com.au. Kyle Chisel here on the night shift with Luke Boner. Highway Advocates are with us. It's Thursday morning. Adam Cockayne, the legal eagle. Robert Bell, the founder of Highway Advocates, an ex-truckie. And now a paralegal. Robert, you've done, once again, during Chisel, you've done some more research on this diary that Warren was talking about?
Yeah, not to labour a point, but the Teletrack NabMen Sentinel was approved as an electronic work diary in December last year. So if that's a particular work diary that Warren is using, although they do have other products, but if that is the one he is using, then it should have been accepted by Transport for New
okay,
South Wales.
So if it should be, and it isn't, what Warren said, and I get it, I totally get what Warren's saying, it's not much good to you when the bloke from the RMS says, sorry, I don't recognise that. You're stuffed, aren't you? What do you do?
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, until these laws are federal laws instead of state laws, there's always going to be variances in the way that each state sort of applies it. It's the way it is.
Okay, why can't we, and you've been a truckie for 20 years, maybe this is a question more for Rod Hanafy next Tuesday, why can't we have national trucking laws when so many of the people listening to me now are driving from state to state?
I'm going to give you and your listeners a very quick lesson in constitutional law. The federal government have jurisdiction over road transport. It's a state issue. That's why, unless the states confer that to the feds, it'll remain a state law rather than a federal law.
Another reason to get rid of the states. Seriously. I mean, look at all the different public holidays we have. Daylight saving, different trucking laws. Christ's sake. Make it easy. Anyway, 133353. I've got to take a break. We'll come back. We'll take a couple more calls and I'll let you go. Robert and Adam, I'll let you guys go soon. Robert Bell, you were just giving us a lesson in constitutional law, which I really appreciate. I have actually done extensive research and study into the constitutional law. I'll give you my source if I can.
What section of the Constitution has been breached?
Section? What section? There is no one section. It's just the vibe of the thing.
There you go. You see? So there you are. 133 1-800-150-153 is the telephone number. Carl's online. G'day, Carl.
Yeah, g'day, fellas. Yeah, listen, I've just got a question. I'm a truck driver. We've got various depots throughout New South Wales, where I work. And I just want to know where I stand or what's the go with... I'm based in Sydney. If my boss says to me, I need you to go tomorrow to, say, Goulburn, jump in the truck, and then continue on, say, further south to wherever I go, Cooma, whatever it is, that drive from Sydney to Goulburn in a car, he'll give me a car to go in. Now, obviously, I'm on the clock. I'm getting paid. It goes in my timesheet. But the RMS has said to me, we only want to see a heavy vehicle in your work diary. So is that the case, or do I still log in that vehicle that I'm driving while I'm working, because it's considered work hours, not necessarily driving hours?
Okay, Robert, what's the answer here?
Well, in that instance, mate, the RMSs, or Transport for New South Wales, are correct. You only have to record your hours in a work diary if you're driving what's defined as a fatigue-related vehicle, which is a vehicle with a GVM of more than 12 tonne. So unless the car you're driving weighs more than 12 tonne, it's got a GVM more than 12 tonne, then you're not required or able to put that time down in your work diary. But you are still required not to drive when you're fatigued, and any work time that you've done outside of a heavy vehicle can still be considered as part of your work day, right, in regards to, are you fatigued or not? So always be mindful of that.
Right, okay, all good. Okay, thanks, fellas.
Okay, thanks for your call. Got a very interesting call on Tuesday with Rod Hanafy, boys. And it was a bloke, it was a great call. He has not driven a truck, but he's been involved in sales. He's been a fleet manager, currently a fleet manager of a small fleet, 50 trucks. He said he's got friends who've got 200. But he said, on the topic of trying to encourage young people to get behind the steering wheel and take up the trucking, become part of the trucking industry, he said he has witnessed fleet managers screaming at trucks. The driver is at a DC. He's in his queue. He's gotten there on time. He's done everything spot on. But he finds himself in a queue. And he's late. And his fleet manager rings up and is screaming at him on the phone, "Where the hell are you?" "Well, I'm at the distribution center. I'm in a queue. I can't do anything." And well, if you're late, and if you don't hurry up and pick up that load and get to such and such, we could lose that account. And he's being screamed at. Well, the guy said, "Well, what's the point?" He said, "What am I supposed to do if I leave before they've unpacked me and repacked me? What's the point in that?" The point the caller was getting to was a lot of drivers, particularly young naive drivers, are bullied. What do you say to that, Rob?
Look, I'll say this, Luke. All of us have motivators that make us go to work or help us, you know, strive to be good at what we do. One of the main things that motivates me to make the success out of Highway Advocates is the thought that I never want to go back to driving trucks again. So if I feel like that at my age, how can you persuade someone young leaving school to end, you know, based on my experience or even a shorter experience, how would you persuade them to take on a job which means you can be fined thousands of dollars if you make the slightest little error, make mistake on a piece of paper.
A spelling mistake.
Yeah, a spelling mistake. How could you take on a job where, for the most part, you're liable to getting your house taken off you if you have an accident at work? How could you take on a job that you're probably not going to get paid the award wage or all the award entitlements? There's so many things that are wrong with this industry that there's no way known I'd ever encourage anyone, young or old, to enter it as a driver.
Wow. If that's the case, we are in trouble, because truck drivers are in demand. There is a shortage. They're not, you know, when people retire, there's no one coming up the back end to replace them. And if that's the case, our shelves, Coles and Woolies and Aldi and the rest, the shelves will be empty. There'll be no fuel underground at a service station, because it's trucks that deliver that. And the only way out of that then is to bring in labour from overseas.
Well, that is happening already. And I mean, that's always been the case in Australia, really, in one way or another. And I will counter what I said also by saying there are a lot of good employers out there. We've met some recently, like Philippe, who was a cooler early this morning. Went and sat down with his boss. He valued Philippe as an employee. He helped him fill out all this paperwork he needed to get his license. And there's been other employers that we've come across that have been right behind their drivers when they've been charged with offence. Some of them even pay their legal fees. But there's different stratas, I guess, or layers that exist in transport in Australia. And there's a definite layer that think they can get by doing all these things wrong. And there's still enough of them out there to make this industry not a great place to be part of. But
Jesus, strong words. Judy, hello.
Hi, how you going?
Good, Judy. The boys are listening. What did you want to say?
My ex-husband's been in the industry for over 50 years. He's 70 years old. Now, he went to a meeting years ago, and he asked the police to spell Coonabarabran, and they couldn't. So he said, well, how is us truck drivers supposed to do? So they told him to put subject to human error on the end of his work diary. So it's S-T-H-E, and he's always got away with spelling words wrong. He's never been charged.
Robert?
So,
Robert, you're on.
You are allowed to do that. If there's, as long as they can see what you're trying to spell, that the law allows you to make slight errors like that. No one expects everyone to be able to spell Coonabarabran or Catamatite or any of these other place names around Australia. As long as you've got the right speedo reading down and you've had a good stab at spelling it, if you get fined for that, come and give us a call.
Yeah, well,
That's all I can say about that.
Yeah, no, he's told a lot of people to make sure you just put subject to human error, because in his age, like being 70, there's a lot of illiterate people, and also these days, like young ones can't even spell anything, so they've always got away with it. But also, Luke, I was going to say about that guy who being charged, has to pay his employer. He was actually on the mobile phone, so that's why the insurance company won't touch him. So,
okay, yeah, I get that. He broke the law. But what happens if a truck driver goes through a red light and there's damage caused? Does insurance cover that?
Well, that's the thing. See, when we had our business, we had separate insurance. So we had truck insurance, we had marine insurance, and then we had an insurance on my ex-husband in case somebody, they didn't look pay out, and they went the driver. So they can actually also go the driver for damage and everything. Yes, they can do it.
So the driver then has to have their own personal insurance.
Exactly.
Now my missus, she's got rid of it now, but she's had for the last 20 years a window cleaning business. And it's just her and a truck. But she's had insurance in case she damages something in the execution of doing her job. Adam?
Yeah, well, the situation with an employee is that even if they commit an offence, as this guy certainly did, he was on the mobile phone, that was ringing. Yeah, so and he was convicted of that, so there's no doubt that he did something wrong. But nonetheless, the employer was responsible for covering any of the damage in that situation, because he was an employee. However, because of this third-party arrangement, the people who suffered the damage were able to go directly after the employee and ignore the employer. So that's a legal issue in that case.
It's ongoing, so we'll leave it there.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. No, I just thought I'd let you know that, yeah, we had insurance. So when we lost our truck on Toowoomba Range, it was burnt to the ground. The insurance paid out on the truck, the marine insurance for the produce that was on the truck, but then they could have went my ex-husband if he had have done something wrong, but he didn't. It was a burst oil feed line to the turbo, so he was lucky. But if he had have had an accident, they could have went him as well. And it's like if he ran into somebody on the road, a car or anything, they could go the company, plus they could go him as reckless as a driver. So, but I cannot find anywhere that will insure drivers at the moment, because I've been looking, because I'm a driver, so to protect myself for that to not happen.
Look, if you... Yeah, look, Judy, if you're an employee of a company, then that company should be responsible for covering you in these situations.
Oh, that's what they said to me when I talked to them about it. I actually discussed it with the manager and he said, no, you're covered with us. But I just pointed out to him too what had happened in the past. So.
Okay, but you, Adam, you just said the employer should cover it. But even if the employee breaks the law, Adam?
Yes, if it's done within the course of their employment. So if you're driving your truck and you commit a traffic offence whilst driving the truck for the purposes of doing your work, then the employer should be held responsible for whatever damages occur as a result of that.
Judy, thanks for your call.
No worries. See you, bye.
Okay, and Judy was originally just trying to tell us that maybe a loophole would be, which is what her husband did, who's 70, subject to human error, S-T-H-E, and she said that that might get you through it. We're going to have to really hurry up now, boys. Jenny, what did you want to say?
Hi, Luke. I'll try to be very quick. It's a question about traffic lights. I call them reactionary. I can't find anyone who knows anything about how traffic lights work. Now, I got a red light camera fine come through yesterday. Now, these reactionary that I call them, so in other words, the light will be green, you're heading towards it, there's nothing there. If a car comes, it goes bang and changes straight away. Now, there's other sets of traffic lights, most of them, if a car comes, it sits there till it's its turn, right? So I've gotten caught in this little loop. I know I'm going to have to pay this fine, but I'd like to understand what's going on. Do the boys know anything about these traffic lights that decide they're going to change instantly compared to the ones that just change on cycle? And do they change? Like, do they change from sets of traffic lights? You know, is one set of traffic lights at one time of the morning, for example, doing the reactionary change, and the rest of the day doing the normal change? Am I making any sense?
Yeah, you are making sense to me. And Robert, what did you want to say?
Well, what we were just talking about there before, Jenny, it'd be great if we had uniform traffic lights throughout the country, but we don't. But one of the things, Jenny, that I did a driving course some years ago called the Smith Method, and what it taught me to do was to anticipate cars coming along crossroads, etc. So a great little tip for that, if you're coming down a road to a traffic light, it's the middle of the night, whatever, it's all quiet, but you see a car on the crossroad coming towards it, then perhaps expect that light to go red on you. And that's probably... You know, the way I learnt to drive and did that course, it's a great thing just to sort of anticipate those types of things.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I do know that. It's just that I just don't... I don't know. If they move them around, you know, if they decide, no, it's not this set of traffic lights this week, it'll be that set of traffic lights, that just seems a little unfair. And it's hard to sort of get any information about what that cycle is or how it works.
Yeah, I guess you just obey the law, but try and be a little bit reactionary. And if you see a car approaching that set of traffic lights and they're before you, anticipate that it's probably going to go red on you. I have lights on my way home, Jenny, and boys, listen to this, and they are on timers. I wish they were reactionary, because it's only me going down this street here, right down there at Darling Harbour and going across, and I'm waiting what seems an eternity at a red light, and there's no other car on the bloody road. None. And that one of them is a pedestrian crossing. It's not even a vehicular crossing. It's a pedestrian crossing. And I've got to wait at it for 5 minutes, and there's no one. So I actually don't mind the reactionary lights, but anyway, I see I'm getting no sympathy from you guys whatsoever. Jenny, thank you very much for your time. We'll make this the last call because we're going to go. Neil, hello.
G'day, Luke. How you going?
Good, mate. You're the lucky last. Highway Advocates, what did you want to say?
Right. It's a little bit off the side, I think, but I was just wondering, I've been listening to you for a while, is there, with the truck drivers, do they have to say you're based in New South Wales, do you have to be licensed interstate if you drive interstate? Or is there a national license?
Robert.
No, Neil, all licences are state licenses, but all states give mutual recognition to other states' licenses. There's some conditions attached to that, but generally, if you have a New South Wales license, then you're licensed to drive anywhere in Australia.
Okay, I'm a Sparky, so it's a little bit off subject, but
Robert, move your microphone to just below your mouth. Move your mic to just lower it. That's it. Robert,
are you still going?
Yeah, sorry, just lost you there for a sec, mate. What was that question?
It's just about licensing in the state.
Yeah, no, I get that question. But like I said, yep. It's the state licenses throughout Australia. There is no federal license, so but all the states give mutual recognition. So you're pretty safe in that regard, mate.
Well, I'm a Sparky, so it's a little bit off track, but we've got a weird thing called an Australian Standard book that we all have to abide by. And I've worked quite different parts of the country, and there's a bit of mutual recognition coming in on the East Coast, but it's quite strange. If you go to Western Australia, you have to have a Western Australian electrical license, and they will cost you about five times what anything does on the East Coast.
Yeah, well, all I can say to that, mate, is thank Christ we don't have 50 or more states. You know, enough as it is.
can we just have one ruling body to take care of everything for us?
Oh, please.
I hear your pain, mate.
Yeah, it's just strange that, you know, and all I've got to do is send them a photo of my license that I've got on the eastern coast, and it's a processing fee of over $400 and something these days to be allowed to work on the other side of the country.
Quick question before you go, Neil. Would you encourage kids to become a Sparky today?
Yes, indeed, I would.
Robert.
Yep, there seems to be plenty of work out there. It seems to be a good trade. I've been doing it for 35-odd years now, and the only time I've ever been out of work is when I needed to have a break and didn't want to work. So.
Yeah, well, I've had to use a Sparky a few times at my place, and the bill that I got at the end of each adventure, I'm not surprised you would encourage it.
Yeah, that's why I work away, just in case I need any electrical work done at home, then I can afford to pay it.
Yeah, exactly. Tell me, are girls leaving school and looking for Sparky apprenticeships? It's traditionally been a bloke's job, and I don't know why, because it's not a physical job like Bricky's labourer. Are women becoming Sparkies?
Cut us a bit of slack, mate. We still do physical work. there's nowhere near. I would say in my working career, I've probably worked with maybe 4 or 5 girls in total.
Yeah. Well, we get lots of callers now from women who are truckies, and that's been traditionally a male job, hasn't it, over the years, Robert? Yeah.
Yes, there's absolutely no reason why girls couldn't be Sparkies, and the girls I have worked with have been exceptionally good.
It's another topic, and it's a topic we've discussed on the program before, but I wonder, is there snobbery out there? Are some parents hell-bent on their children going to university, when really they should be pushing their kids towards a trade? Neil?
I suppose it depends on the kid themselves, really. I haven't pushed my kids in one direction or another, but I think it's up to the kid, and I think any of my kids could have been perfectly good tradesmen, tradespersons.
Good on you, Neil.
It's up to the individual, but thanks for the call, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
No, thank you for making it. All right, boys, I'm going to let you go. So, 0491-263-602, Highway Advocates. Just look them up, highwayadvocates.com.au. Adam Cochrane, really good to talk to you again, mate. We'll talk again soon. Robert Bell, the founder of Highway Advocates. Your lesson for the week, don't keep your powder dry when you're on the side of the road.
No, exactly. Name, rank and serial number. Don't give them. Don't do their job for them. Don't give the prosecution all the facts they need. Make them work for it.
Just take us through it again.
Well, when you pull up on the side of the road and they'll ask you all those questions, they'll give you the evidence warning. There's only certain things you're required to say. Don't spill your guts, because that will be used against you in court. It'll be incriminating. And certainly do not sign anything.
Yeah. So you might be nervous. Know your rights. So you give them your name, show them your license. But then what do you do then?
Well, you can answer certain questions. Adam might.
Yeah. Hey, Adam?
Yeah, well, what you could do is just give us a call. We've had that. Robert and I have been called in the middle of the night by people who don't know what to do, and we just take them through the process and give them some advice.
So ring them in the middle of the night.
24/7.
0491 263 602. If you're in trouble, ring Highway Advocates. Good to talk to you, boys.
Good to talk to you, Luke.
Okay, thanks a lot, Luke.
Have a great week. If anyone's got any problems, call Highway Advocates or look them up and contact them. Your first visit is free. And I'll just say that they have an easy repayment plan too. If they take you on, there's an easy repayment plan. You don't get hit with a huge bill. Okay, they're real people and they really do care. 133353. So there's lots to talk about this morning, folks. We'll open the lines for general discussion right now. Lots to get through. And the quickie, we're into day three of the quickie. The quickie is coming up in just a while.